Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from Syntex, sponsored by ASBA. We're at the Embassy Suites Scottsdale. What a fantastic event. It's just kicking off right now. And I have two fantastic guests with me who had intended to be in the quiet studio in downtown Tempe to get today. And then when I was invited to participate in Syntex, I said, I want to bring these guys with me. So please welcome to the studio, the makeshift studio today, Jeff Orr with In Demand Leadership and my friend Chris Huey from Galvanize.
Hello.
Hey, excited to be here. I love the energy in this room, actually.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome.
It's bouncing off the walls. I'm curious to see how this sounds. So if you're listening and you know me personally, you can text me and say, sounded good. And if not, we'll catch you on the flip side. This will also be a podcast on our network. And then we, of course, give Jeff and Chris permission to use that MP3 soundbite as well. But let's have a conversation, if we could, first about how the two of you connected. We've got a neat event coming up at Galvanize on Friday night.
Yes.
It's the LinkedIn Live Local Phoenix event.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to get to work with the incredible students at GCU that put on TEDx. I don't know if many people know it, but it's a completely student-ran event. So there's eight or so kind of students that lead. There's 40 students in essentially a project management class that come together for the TEDx event, and they have about 100 or so volunteers the day of event. You know, I connected with those guys to get the word out to the community because I love TED Talks, and I think especially for our community, like it really brings together thought leadership, future kind of looking outside of ourselves, looking outside of our city, outside of even our country. And so I just wanted to support those guys, got connected with them. They worked with Galvanize and even got tickets to go see the TEDx event. And one of those incredible speakers was my newest friend, Jeff, over here. And I begged him and pleaded.
Offered him bribes.
It didn't take much.
Yeah, well, I was like, hey, like maybe like food that I'm not going to provide, so I offered to take him to lunch, but we didn't even make it to lunch.
You were offering lunch? I don't remember that.
Oh, well,
I just thought it was a
meeting. That was me lunch. Offering you lunch,
yeah, that's
Chris.
That's because you didn't get lunch. So, but yeah, we got to connect, mm-hmm. And the thing about him that really captured my attention in the presentation itself was it really talked about generations and communicating across generations, and I think that's where we're at right now. And me and Jeff even got to speak about this a couple weeks ago when we just sat down and talked, that mm-hmm. Generations are kind of shortening and kind of the differences of what people are growing up with is excelling with technology. And so I was like, please talk, you know, for 15, 20 minutes at LinkedIn Local and kind of let me give you more people to share this with, and hopefully we can kind of take that mentality out into leadership everywhere. And that's what Jeff does. So.
And it is a hot topic. I don't need to tell you that because you're the one who's teaching us. But I have had other guests on the show come in and talk about the struggles in how to have those generational conversations.
Yes.
So give us an introduction to you and your company, and obviously speak to what Chris just teed up for us.
Oh, that TEDx was awesome. It was it was just like such an honor to be able to speak. My company's In Demand Leadership. It's a leadership consulting company. I coach leaders and business owners all the way from, you know, single solopreneur all the way up to Fortune 500 companies and executives and so on. And so I love leadership. I've always loved leadership. And I've always had a passion for the college age, that kind of range. It got renewed a little bit more because I had an opportunity to go back and actually get an MBA at GCU. Rather than just one MBA, I decided, hey, I'll do the dual program and get two MBA degrees because six letters is better than three. So why not? And so the opportunity was there. But that really sparked a renewed vision for me and passion for this age group. Because I know millennials get huge pounding all the time.
Yes, they're not motivated.
Exactly.
They don't care. They're
not
entitled.
Yeah, they're entitled and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I know quite a few 40 and 50 and 60-year-olds that are the same
yes.
way. So it really doesn't matter what the generation is. But since I focus more on leadership and love leadership, I started doing more research. The TEDx thing came up, and they're like, hey, well, what can you talk on? And I gave them I gave them three different ideas. And when I mentioned millennial leadership, they were like,
yes.
That's it. That would be a great one. So I dove into that a bit more. And just talking with millennial leaders, it's like, these guys are focused and driven. And so it's
tech savvy.
They are. And yep. It's like, why?
Inclusive. Or is that the right? Yeah, inclusive. They're phenomenal.
Yeah, there's way too many companies that I think are missing out on this generation of leaders because they're just throwing out, you know, the baby with the bathwater. That's an old phrase. But
I got it.
They're throwing away their, you know, iPhone 4 with all the rest of the phones. But really, the ability to identify these young leaders and then engage them is really important. And I think a lot of companies could really grow a lot more just by understanding how to identify that. And so, yeah, so that's where the passion was. The TEDx event, exactly what I'm talking about, student-led. They did such a phenomenal job. It's very, very professional. I do a lot of professional gigs, not just on the speaking side, but musically.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's another career. I've got three CDs I've released. I've performed on big stages.
And a musician, like instruments as well as singing? Or
yes.
What is your... What talent are you hiding from us, at least from Chris and I?
I'm not hiding. That's a whole other career, the rock star thing.
Yeah.
I've done three CDs, performed on stages in front of thousands, and still perform out, playing at various venues. And I've played in coffee houses in front of 10 people. All, you know, everything in between, and had a lot of fun with that. And I love performing. I love communicating. That's one of the reasons why I love speaking. It's just that ability. One of my favorite things is when I see people in an audience and the light bulb comes on and they get it on what I'm trying to communicate to them. There's a connection there. I just love encouraging and inspiring people and helping them to understand and grow in whatever it is that they're doing. That's one of the reasons why I love coaching. Yeah, so that TEDx, they're very professional. The backstage, the green room, and their timetables and all that. So it was they did it so well that it was clearly very well led and thought through. I mean, they had contingency plans. They had, I don't know if you knew about the weather. They had their entire outdoor thing set up. Very, very cool, professional looking, you know, the food vendors and all that stuff. And then we had inclement weather, and they had to change how they were doing
things.
Like
they were prepared.
Yeah, at the last second. So very, very well done. I was very impressed. So much so, I'm like, hey, I've got to interview these guys. I need to write a new book. So
this was the beginning of a new book around millennial leadership.
Yes. So I'm writing a new book. It's going to be called Inside the Mind of a Millennial Leader.
So needed.
So I'm already interviewing leaders and doing research and very excited about that. So, yeah, that'll be coming out very soon.
Yeah, and this is what, in talking with Jeff, this is what makes Jeff's TEDx, but the way he kind of thinks about communication is a little bit different because of his musical background, right? You're connecting with people through yourself, though, not through directly them. You're trying to give a part of yourself to them and communicate in that way. And I think that's, A, it comes off in the way he presents just traditionally in front of people at TEDx. But I think that's what makes his view of communicating with people that much more, I guess, rounded, that much more poignant, because he kind of has that background along with the business background where, you know, he's taking more of a cognitive approach to communicating with various people. And every day, I mean, I live in this world as much as anybody. There's so many different types of people from different types of backgrounds, from different age groups. You know, you live in this world of segmenting who to communicate naturally, but for some reason, generationally, we acknowledge it in age, but we don't acknowledge it in kind of any other more defined way, right? Sometimes it's sometimes it's negative, right? We talk down to some people because we don't think they have the wisdom if we want to get controversial, you know, right now there are very young individuals that are acting for change And regardless of your views on politics or anything, you have to admire that type of leadership at that type of age, because it's not something I could say I do. But there's a lot of backlash.
That's really interesting you bring that up. I was just thinking about that just this morning as I was getting, I was kind of thinking through this program, and I thought about that. And you're right. I mean, you could go any different direction on the particular view. But what I was impressed with was the leadership, because that's what leaders do. And when we talk about and think about, hey, how do I identify the young leaders in my organization? How do I identify them and engage them? Where are they coming from? And I thought about that. You know, leaders see a problem and they want to solve it. They want to fix something. They want to be part of moving something toward a solution. And that's, you know, obviously this was driven by, you know, a really tragic event. But leadership rose up, you know, inside, hey, I've got to do something different. Now, how that plays out, that's a whole different story. But that's what we need to look for in our organizations is on that leadership. How do I delineate the millennial leader from the other millennials? How do I find them? How do I engage them? And one of those ways is looking for somebody who is starting to speak out against something or for something. They want to be part of a solution. There's just a natural draw to it. There's certain verbiage that's used with leaders. And that's how you can start to identify who they are in your midst. And then, okay, well, how can I engage them? How can I give them something to lead? So, yeah, that, you know, in that group there, there's certainly something leadership worthy, and hopefully there's a lot of growth as a leader in the future.
Yeah, and hopefully, so. I mean, I don't know, I'm not the best on generations, so I don't know what generation they're falling into now, but I'm curious, and I was watching something, you know, and it was specifically kind of looking in 20, 30 years where these people will be, and oddly, the reference was John Kerry. I forget what show it was on, but it was a old video of John Kerry at 27 speaking out in kind of his disengagement with the veteran community around him at that time and kind of speaking out on it. But it was so eloquent that everybody in the room fell in love with him. And it was kind of the story of this. And you're curious, like, is wherever these students go, whether it's to lead a company, whether it's to lead something that they're truly passionate about, you know, whether that's to, you know, go out and even be a politician or whatever it is, hopefully they are activating that generation and kind of living in this world of hands-on, I'm going to take this situation and I'm going to do something about it, right? I think that's one thing that, no matter what you think, like, that's what we need more in all people, in all society, is people that feel some type of way about something, and instead of going on Twitter and trolling the world, instead of going on Facebook and sharing with your friends your views, they're actually doing actionable steps and defined things that they want changed. And again, this is just top of mind, but right, this is ultimately what we want out of society. I don't want the world to be full of Twitter trolls. I want people to actually stand in front of somebody proud in what their message is. And again, this goes back to not wanting to personally attack. Like, this, like, so many of these things get personal, and I think that that's where we all go wrong, because if you're passionate about something, it has nothing to do with who I am. It has everything to do with what I want to represent, what I want to stand for. You can disagree, not agree, but that has nothing to do with me. And I think people being out in front of things make that even harder. I think it's easier on social media in a world of, you know, you can say whatever. And there's repercussions. There's absolutely repercussions for things you put out there.
Well, you can certainly tell when somebody runs out of ideas because they start calling you names.
Is that what it is?
They just throw a bunch of, oh, you're a bigot, you're this or that, and they've run out of any kind of argument. And I agree. I think we need more authentic debate, and that's where leadership can really come into play, is that the leaders need to be able to communicate a message, allow for other people to communicate back in an authentic way. You don't have to agree on everything. but you can hear somebody's point of view. You don't have to yell at them. You can communicate. You can communicate passionately about something. But we do need leadership. Unfortunately, a lot of politics is run into rhetoric instead of leading and communicating. I know there's good politicians out there somewhere. I'm sure there's plenty. Unfortunately, it's the crazy ones that get all the media play because it sells. And that's what, you know, that's the reality of the media is they are there to sell something, ideology, advertisement, whatever. But leadership, you know, leaders do need to stand and they need to be able to communicate their message and then empower people to come along to that vision. I love how... oh, man, the guy's name escapes me now. The guy from Ritz-Carlton, the CEO of Ritz-Carlton. I love what he said as he brought his vision of Ritz-Carlton. He didn't hire people. He invited them to join him on building this vision. I thought, man, that's a great way to bring people. Instead of just, oh, I'm going to hire a bunch of people. No, I'm going to invite you into this vision. And so as a leader, how can we invite people into the vision of something better? In this case, you know, with these young students, they want something better. How can they invite as leaders? And it's the same with anybody. You know, if you're wanting to change or make a big impact in the world, how can you invite somebody into that vision, whatever that vision is?
And I think you kind of touched on something that I think very few people talk about, but everyone kind of knows and intrinsically feels, is the difference between managing people and leading people.
Yes, that's
a huge difference.
And from the outside, a lot of the times, it's hard to distinguish that, right? In business, it's very hard to distinguish a CEO that's truly a leader of people that are having people buy into their vision that, you know, quite frankly, if they were waving a sign on the side of the street, that people would be like, hey, this seems like a great idea, versus, you know, kind of the more, this is my role. It's not necessarily a buy-in into my leadership perspective. It's a acknowledgement of my authority, I think, is the difference between truly leading people versus, you know, kind of instructing people or organizing people to do something. But at the end of the day, They're not into your message. They're not into what you're trying to build. They're into acknowledging your role or your authority in something. And I think that's something that's very powerful. And again, wherever you want to take leadership, that's what makes leadership truly transferable, right? Between a CEO of a business, somebody like the Dalai Lama or whatever it is that people are drawn to follow and like you said, buy into the vision that you have and be a part, integrate themselves into that part of the vision as opposed to just being instructed to sit in this area of the vision or, you know, do this for the vision, but truly not buy in and feel that leadership. So
Jeff, I'm curious, what leadership traits do you see that millennials have that might be different than, you know, somebody in my generation? Is there a difference?
Yes, there is, actually. There's a great report that just came out contrasting millennial leaders and non-millennial leaders and current CEOs and some of the things that they are seeing as important traits not only for now, but also 10 years. As a matter of fact, that was one of the questions, like, okay, what do you think the CEO 10 years from now is going to need as far as their leadership traits?
After establishing how, you know, what are their traits and what is that going to look like? Will that translate to being a CEO of a major corporation down the road?
It's a great question and a great view. And so the current CEOs, the things that they were looking at saying, hey, these are the things that 10 years from now, that's what a CEO needs to know. And that was critical thinking skills, business management, stakeholder management. Those were the top three.
Okay.
The millennials, they had those, but those were less important. More important was leadership impact and interpersonal skills. So their ideal CEO in their mind, as they were taking this survey, was a coach, a mentor, somebody who inspired them, was able to speak to the vision very compellingly, that kind of thing. So they were feeling like that was what they would need in 10 years. So here was, the report was saying, here's one of the challenges. Managers and CEOs, you know, the C-suite leaders, the managers, they will tend to hire and develop people that are like their own thinking. Yet millennial leaders are thinking a little bit differently. So here we've got this challenge between these two views. As I see it, and the people that I've talked to and coached over the years, obviously business skills, the critical thinking, all those are very important. I tend to lean more toward the inspirational, the interpersonal side of things, because I'm very relational, so that's how I float. So I think there's going to be a shift more toward a relational component, interpersonal skills, the ability to read people, see where they're at, empower them, not excuse things, but to be able to say, hey, how can we empower our team and lift them up and elevate them so that they are accomplishing what they want to accomplish, we're accomplishing what we need to accomplish as an organization, and we're all making the impact that we need to make. So I think that's going to be a future traits are going to be pretty important.
You're both saying the same thing, and from a perspective of what I've been able to see, just even here in the Metro Phoenix area, with the CEOs, all the C-level executives that I've had the occasion to interview, most of them are having this very conversation from wherever they sit age-wise as a leader in their organizations. They're saying that very thing. Like, it isn't about critical thinking anymore. I mean, it's, you still have to have that, but that's foundational.
Well, we have an app for that now.
Right. Well, we do. I mean, really, enter IA. I mean,
thanks, millennials.
Right. And yet, corporations, organizations, and the leaders of those organizations are saying, we've got to be able to communicate effectively and listen to and hear and implement what our customers are asking for, our clients, our employees, the community at large. Mm-hmm. And that is a very different leadership skill then.
Yes. And, you know, I've found over the years, it's an interesting thing that people don't necessarily want to have their ideas implemented as much as they want to be heard.
Correct.
They want to know that you have heard them as a leader. You've considered what they've said. And as a leader, if you're inviting that kind of dialogue, you're going to get better ideas. You're going to get more creative ideas. I remember being in that rut myself as a younger leader and thinking that I had to come up with all the ideas myself. And I had some very talented and skilled leaders on my team. And when I finally got out of my own way and listened to them, we took off as a group, because I was able to then implement this idea from them, that one, and incorporate it and facilitate it. And most of my ideas then became irrelevant because theirs were better. And so we just facilitated those ideas and really grew together as a team. But it really is about, you know, hey, I'm not just giving you my time. I'm really listening to what you're saying.
Yeah, legitimately, authentically. Yeah. I want to touch on Galvanize community, because that's one of the things I love so much about Galvanize, Chris, and obviously you can fill in the blanks here, but first of all, let's tell our listeners about Galvanize, and then I want to make that point.
Okay. So Galvanize, the beautiful place that employs me as their evangelist, that is a title for those that are curious. That is actually on my business card.
So you're the CEO, the chief evangelist officer.
I mean, I feel like I should be for Phoenix, if nothing else. Other campuses, we have campuses across the country in 7 different states, so they also have evangelists, but in the world of the Phoenix office, I am the chief evangelist officer. Ultimately, this goes kind of to the message. So what Galvanize is, we have smaller business companies. We've provided them space and a environment of knowledge sharing is kind of what I view it. I don't view it as just, you know, desks, seats, a place to work with Wi-Fi, right? It's more than that. It's more than co-working, because it's ultimately a community that we're providing. So on the entrepreneurship side, we have a community of small business entrepreneurs and agile larger businesses, Banner Health and some of these companies that, again, they want to stay nimble. They want to be in an environment where it's open, where your ideas are more heard, right? Like, this is ultimately what Galvanize is share your ideas with everybody. So that's one side on the company side. On the other side, it's education. So we do web development and data science education for those that want to make a career change, or you know, they have some skills, but they really want to go into that career path for now or for the future. And again, for them is also a community that gives them proximity to companies, right? Like people that are actually developing. People that are actually working on technical problems. And on the reverse side, you have, you know, companies that like to feel that vibrance from students. They like to feel that academic atmosphere. I mean, Google was built on a very academic foundation. Facebook the same way, very academic foundation, even though the CEOs may or may not have went to, you know, college for more than a little bit. That was kind of the mentality that they came out of, was very academic.
They understand how important learning and collaborating is, right?
Yeah, and so ultimately it's a community for both technology, you know, enthusiasts and, you know, business owners. And in there we also have large-scale events to, you know, welcome in other people into our community that aren't physically in the galvanized space. And for those that are curious what an evangelist does, in Phoenix, I essentially take the galvanized message out into the entire state of Arizona. I say, hey, let's collaborate. Let's work together. We'd love to have you in our galvanized community, but even if you're outside of the galvanized community, how can I support your organization? How can I support your goals for success? How can I connect you with talent? How can, you know, we improve the talent gap too? How do we, you know, make other companies recognize what we're doing in Phoenix so that they kind of are interested enough to start exploring, you know, why the cost of living is attractive? Oh, you know, commercial real estate's probably attractive. It seems like there's a lot of talent in Phoenix, you know, so it kind of takes that message and hopefully puts it more out into the community above just the, you know, what's happening on our physical space.
Yeah, I got to put a plug in for Chris, because he took me on a tour a couple weeks ago when we met. And what's really interesting, I kind of give my age away, I'm a Gen Xer. And in the early 2000 timeframe, the open space office idea, the collaborative space, was just starting to come about, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And at that time, all the Gen Xers were like, this is such a cool idea. Where can we do this? And all the boomers were like, and they had all the money. And they were like, I don't know. This doesn't fit our box. This doesn't fit our paradigm. How's this going to work? You can't share ideas. Your competition will steal it. And they had some very valid arguments. But at that time, culturally, we just weren't there yet.
Yeah, and if I could jump in, it's two things. It's one, I need to protect my ideas. Why would I want to share what I'm thinking before it's fully baked?
Right.
And then the other thing is our ability or inability possibly to think with a lot of commotion.
Yeah.
Right. So
well, exactly.
Right. I mean, and I think that's a boomer at large, is I gotta protect. I gotta compete. I want to think big, but I need to do it in a container.
Yes.
And can't put that out there until I'm ready to launch. And what we're saying is that the Gen X, the millennials, and certainly the Gen Zs are saying, well, there's enough for everybody to go around.
Right, right. And that was the culture in the world that you lived in and that I, you know, was part of. And so it was really cool to go down and meet Chris at Galvanize and see it fully realized.
Yes.
And in this space, it's not just some tables. I mean, it's an old produce warehouse that has been completely redone. It's got such a cool industrial vibe with the brick walls and the high ceilings and the windows. And it's so high tech. And it's so very cool. You go in and people, there's an energy there.
Absolutely.
That people are sharing ideas and they're working. And there's some people that aren't talking to each other. That's normal. But there's all this stuff going on. And then he walks me by the companies that have leased office space, which are no bigger than a broom closet, but it's got a high ceiling. and the front wall is glass. And they're, you know, you got a Bitcoin place, you got a startup tech company over here, yep. and they're writing with a marker on the glass wall, and they're doing their formulas. It was so cool just to walk through that. And then with the angel investors and the mentors that you have going on that are helping these companies, these startups, with their funding and their ideas. And so it's just a great environment.
It is. It's phenomenal.
It's just way cool.
Yeah.
I should be an evangelist over there.
I'll tell you, the competition isn't steep.
We just need to go evangelize on the ski slopes.
Exactly.
Ooh, now
we're
talking.
We do have a Denver office and a Boulder office. So we have to go to Denver.
We cannot lose you to Boulder or Denver, Chris.
They don't want me in Denver, so don't worry about that. So I actually left a pancake breakfast this morning. We had waffles and pancakes, and the competition is who can design the most interesting pancake. And we did have barnyard waffles, so it's a great place. But ultimately, right, I've started using this phrase so much now in terms of building bridges so that hopefully somebody down the line builds a bridge for me, ultimately, is kind of what... It's this tech paradigm that just permeates through the entire tech world of open source and sharing. And, one great example is Microsoft. They spent, on the tech side, a long time being in this mentality of what's mine is mine, get your own. And ultimately, Satya Nadella came in and has changed that culture. And the reality is that was hurting them. A lot of situations in development, if you're kind of closed-minded and kind of closed off your product, people develop around you. So that happened a lot to Microsoft. And ultimately, they're like, we can't keep spending time redeveloping something to fit with something we developed, but we didn't share it with anybody, right? Like, if we would have shared it, we wouldn't have to do this. So they had to put in a great amount of time on essentially open source, freely used products to get theirs to work with them, just to get back in the competition of, you know, the Apples and the people that have essentially folded into this mentality of what's mine is mine if it needs to be, but if it doesn't, the whole goal is to build a bridge, let people cross it, and hopefully there is a bridge way down the road that they've built for you, so I don't have to build a parallel bridge, right? Like, what's the fastest line to a point? Straight line. So if I'm developing something and you're developing the same thing, there's lack of resources. There's in the terms of my economics professor, specialization has kind of went down on us in that point, right? Because we're both duplicating work, and ultimately, it's resources lost.
Yes.
So that's the mentality that you're starting to see even in these larger companies, at least on the tech side, to kind of even get out from that mentality that was traditional to business. And again, I come out of a finance degree. I say this kind of stuff to a finance manager. I better be like ready to head for the door, because that's this mentality is a very tech first kind of thing, but you're starting to see it creep into other areas. Mm-hmm. So
it'll be interesting to see how that all develops out, because obviously, you know, you have to keep the doors open, and if you're going to employ people and you have to be able to generate enough cash flow to make that all work. So yeah, it's an interesting concept, and seeing how it all comes together, it's interesting to see how it plays out.
How far along are you in your book? I mean, when can we expect to have this in our hot little hands?
Well, that's a great question, and the reason why I keep saying that I'm writing this book is so it'll actually get done.
There you go.
Right now, I'm in the research phase of this, so sure. I am interviewing leaders. As a matter of fact, I just ran into I forget his name. I got his card. He's
from Journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, a guy who worked for ADP for 10 years and decided, you know what, I can do this better. So he starts his own company and his own business. He's 32. See, I remember all this. I don't remember his name.
And 1 year in, he's not even, he and I started our businesses at the same time, and he's a rock star already.
So I'm going to be interviewing him for the book, but I'm interviewing other leaders as well. And so I'm in that research phase.
Yeah.
But I've got a new concept for the book. Some people call it a pamphlet, but I... Okay, this is my weird... This is my weirdness and how I think.
Yeah, throw it out there. I'm excited.
All right, we like weird.
There's a concept of three in our world. For some reason, there's three. How many times do you knock on a door? Three times. You talk about, okay, earth, wind, fire. That's a band. You know, there's sun, moon, and stars. There's solid, liquid, there's gas. Things are in patterns of three for some odd reason in our world, in our culture and things like that. So I thought, hey, why not write a book that's only three chapters long? And the idea came from people are reading less.
Yes.
And they're absorbing tech. They're absorbing information faster. So they're not going to read. I mean, when's the last time you read a full book? I read half, maybe three quarters.
I'm horrible at it. I will tell you how many first chapters I read.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go.
I'm the most well-read first chapter business book guy in the state right now.
So like, I'm thinking three chapters. Make 3 points, three chapters, very quick, easy read,
yep.
And I'll just do a bunch of those and see how that floats.
So, you'll probably skyrocket with your whole series
thinking. When will it be out?
You don't have to answer that necessarily. You're in research phase.
I'm in research phase, so probably 4 or 5 months,
maybe
in the fall.
Good.
Because I have to have it edited.
No, right.
You know, find people to say,
Tell us about Succeed in the New Normal, Winning Strategies in an Unfamiliar World.
Yeah, that was a book that I wrote. I started in 2009 around because the economy had tanked really bad. And what I was wanting to do was no longer available to me. And so the idea was, well, I'll just wait until the economy turns around. I'll get back to doing what I was doing. And then the idea struck me as like, well, what if this is your new normal? Things aren't getting back to normal. And I thought, well, if I'm thinking that, there's got to be a lot of
Absolutely.
Other people that are in the same boat. And so that's where the idea came from, was how to identify when your normal is no longer there and then how to leverage and take advantage of your new normal and really accelerate into the future. And sometimes that's easy. Sometimes not, whether it's, you know, you've just gotten a health, you know, something from the doctor says, hey, you no longer can do this. You have this illness or you have that problem or you've dedicated your life to a job and all of a sudden you get a pink slip and you've been right-sized right out the door, you know,
right.
Which happened to a lot of people in that time period. You know, it happens in industry. I highlight this in the book, you know, with Blockbuster. I mean, hindsight is really easy, right?
Toys R Us right now. Who would have ever thought that Toys R Us would no longer be around?
I was so bummed about
Shocked.
That. But, you know, you look at Amazon. They've taken it over.
Absolutely.
You know? But, yeah, Toys R Us, well, they're, what, $2 billion in the hole at the moment? So they're not doing too well.
Yeah.
But, exactly, these staple organizations that did not see the disruption coming... And it's possible galvanize that is part of a disruption of ideas. You know, who knows where that will go. But to be able to recognize it and leverage it, it's easier when it's hindsight. I use the record companies as one, you know, like, you know, hey, you're a vinyl record manufacturer and you're in your heyday in 1970, right? That whole decade, man, you're cranking away. Then CDs come along. Ah, it's a phase. It'll pass. Then MP3s, I mean,
yeah,
they're gone for the most part. I mean, you can still get vinyl because it's retro. But for the most part, that technology was disrupted and it was wiped out. CDs, that's going the same way. MP3s, digital realm that we're in.
My daughter yesterday was flown out to California. She'll graduate in May from ASU. And Red Bull flew her out to California for an interview today. And she was given a case study to prepare. Marketing and events was the area that they're looking to hire her for. And the conversation that they gave her 2 days to prepare, 15 minutes, you know, on stage presentation, it was PowerPoint, everything. What the conversation was, where does Red Bull need to be in the next 4 years? You know, in 4 years, what is our consumer going to look like? And how are they going to purchase? I mean, they were asking all those questions to think ahead of the curve. Like, let's not mm-hmm. get left behind. Let's strategically, obviously, look at where we're going to be. And having a conversation with somebody who's a millennial and saying, we need you guys in the forefront of this.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Yeah.
I
think that's the most impressive thing about, you know, the companies that actually are so self-aware of who they are that they see the future so far in front of them. You know, Facebook, quite frankly, I think one of the most impressive things was an article I read from Mark Zuckerberg. It's probably 2006 or so. And he fought the idea that Facebook is social media. He's like, I don't believe that. I think it's a utility. I view it as a utility that people will use beyond worrying about, you know, what somebody's doing, or, you know, and he saw that, and ultimately what kind of permeated, at least in the dev tech world, is that they made it so that you could log in with Facebook, right? Truly a utility that is no longer a reality of me even caring what somebody is doing. It's more like a key card. It's more like a, enough people have this, you know, you can use it for other things. And kind of seeing that vision is ultimately, you know, in the world of MySpace v. Facebook, you know, MySpace beat them, they're running, and then just death. You know, because some of the, and I've been thinking about this a lot, specifically around Uber and what will ultimately also be a Red Bull Harvard / case study is how do you get disrupted? It's one thing to be disrupted in a market where it's technology disrupted, disrupting you. It's a whole nother game to just be out-businessed in your own game by somebody if you're at the top, and to literally just have a competitor or you know, a single competitor is what's really impressive when they say, hey, we're just going to do it better. You know, a lot of people pitch this mentality in the startup world if you live there. Very few people can actually execute that, right? Because you're living in this world of being behind. And people like Facebook, people like Lyft right now is just self-infliction by Uber is kind of where they're living. But these are kind of the things that make you really appreciate those people that are so comfortable in their own business that they see, you know, Amazon Web Services. Quite frankly, Amazon, their profitability is in this cloud computing mentality that is what I know them for now. I don't know them as shipping me products. Huh. I know them as a tech company that is at the forefront of true innovation. And that had to, you know, as a business, as Jeff Bezos or whoever, you have to know your company like you know yourself to invest that far down the line, to put marketing thought, all the effort into this creation of what you think the new normal will be, right? It's one thing to be in the new normal. It's another thing to predict the new normal.
Yes, and you bring up a really good point, too, in regard to the change, you know, the pace of change, and where companies can really leverage this is not from the older leaders, because quite frankly, you know, what it's hard enough to think ahead and plan ahead, but there's so many other things on our plate and our mind that we're thinking of. But to engage our millennial leaders in our workforce is so key to this, because they are used to a very fast pace and a very fast change. That's what the world they grew up in, so that's quicker to them. So they are already thinking, hey, how can this be done better? If I don't engage that, I'm going to lose that very valuable employee who's then going to go off and start something on their own and beat me at my own game, because I wouldn't listen. I wouldn't give them the opportunity. So it's just critical, I think, for companies to be able to recognize them, engage them. You don't have to go with every single idea that somebody comes up with, but to be able to hear these ideas and say, okay, what are you seeing that's coming up down the road? What are the new ideas? What are the crazy thoughts? I take clients through this all the time with brainstorming sessions. When you're brainstorming, you need to come up with the most ridiculous ideas and not even analyze them at all. Just come up with the ideas. Then you go back and you start analyzing, because it's somewhere between the most outlandish idea that you can come up with and reality. Somewhere in between is the best idea. And you'll never get to that if you just stay within your box and well, that's not realistic. Of course it's not realistic. I had a client. They were putting on an intimate event. They were looking for intimate event ideas for their clients and then their prospects to meet them, about 20 people. And so I was taking through this process, and so they were going through it, and one of them said, hey, let's take them on a trip to the moon. Ha ha, okay, fine. They put it down, that they didn't analyze it. And so they get done with their ideas, then they started going through, all right, so you said take our clients on a trip to the moon. That's clearly not realistic, but what were you thinking? Well, we live in Houston. NASA's here. oh, hey, does anybody know anybody at NASA that we could get a backstage tour? And they did.
Sweet.
And that's what they ended up doing. It was an incredible event for their clients and their friends. And you know, but they never would have gotten there if they would have said outright, oh, that's a stupid idea.
And taken the eraser and wiped it
exactly.
off the whiteboard.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or the window.
It's those crazy ideas yeah. that as leaders, we need to be brainstorming. All right, what's coming down the road? Well, I don't know yet. Well, let's think about it. For example, universities. Universities are a staple of American institutional life, right?
And then
yet how many online schools are
entered.
There?
Well,
yes,
galvanize.
And galvanized. And how many yeah. different ways now are yep. we learning? Gen Z is now getting ready to enter the workforce. They're around 1999, 2000. That's yeah. their breaking point. 61 million, I think, are about to enter the workforce. Very different than millennials in regard to how they view things. So what? So now there's a new batch. But what ideas do they have on how to improve things? What do they see coming up? Because they live in a different world, and they see things differently, just like millennials see things differently. And then how can we leverage this and make our companies that much better? Not so we can make tons more money. I mean, that's a byproduct. It's so we can accomplish the vision that we have for our companies and our organization. Galvanize has a great vision for what you're doing, you know, and how do we then leverage this so that we can make the impact that we dream about, making an impact on our world and yeah. making our communities better and our city better and all that.
So you're the kind of guy that I could sit and listen to all day. Chris is nodding his head, yes, which is why he's invited you to Galvanize.
Great,
for the
let
LinkedIn.
Me get my square.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. You've talked about your books. You've talked about your passion for music and your music career. You've also talked about being a speaker. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about how you interact with your clients then. I know that you've got a client list that includes some impressive companies, Google and NBC, Chase, mm-hmm. Verizon, mm-hmm. PayPal, Merrill Lynch, right? Fortune 500 companies. What if someone listening today is leading a company or somewhere, you know, upper management, what does that look like to engage in a conversation with you to have a conversation about how do we work together?
Oh, that's a great question. People contact me, like Chris, through LinkedIn.
Okay.
They'll message me, or you can go to my website, indemandleadership.com, and connect with Jeff. You send me an email. I look through all that stuff. I've had people ask. I had one person, they emailed me about speaking to their organization. They were really surprised that I actually called them back in person. Mm-hmm. They were expecting somebody else to call, I guess. But I'm like, no, I call
me.
Them up. It's just me.
Yeah.
So you can contact me that way. So the conversation, it starts with just having a conversation about a 20-minute discovery call. You know, what's going on in your world? What's going on with your leadership, your team? What is it that you're feeling is working really well? What are you struggling with? What feels difficult? What's the blockage? I can usually tell within about 5 minutes of a conversation whether we're a good fit. And that's what I'm looking for, is are we a good fit for each other? I've had some clients or prospects that have called and said, yeah, I want to get, X number of dollars this year. And I want to, they're very profit driven and very money focused. And that's fine. I know a lot of coaches that can help with that. I'm more on the relational component side of things, like, what are you developing as a leader? How are you developing your team? Because the profit is the end product. It's a byproduct of those things. So I take things a little different. But I can tell. I had one guy, he blamed everybody else for his failures. The economy, the software, not enough clients.
That comes so out in those first 5 minutes.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Because I ask, what are you doing to move your business forward? What are you doing for this or that? And I listen for those things. Are you taking responsibility for your actions? Are you the one taking responsibility for the failures and the successes? How are you doing that? So I can tell right away if it's a good fit. If it's a good fit, then I'll move it forward with, what do you want to go from here? What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Because I can certainly help you. And then I customize a coaching program for each client based on what it is they want to learn. If they want to learn communication, we'll pull resources and that kind of thing. We'll design a program for that. So that's how that conversation goes. I've got clients all over the country. What's really cool about our culture is most of it is on the phone, so I don't even have to travel. So I get to stay home, with my family. That's a great thing. The craziest year I had clients in six different time zones. So my schedule was, I'm looking at my calendar, and in one day it's like, good morning, good afternoon, good afternoon, good morning, you know, because it was going from Alaska to Puerto Rico. It was really nuts, but it was a lot of fun. But I've learned a lot from the different areas of the country. Each area has its own unique cultural thing, and because we've lived in so many different parts of the country, I can relate to a lot of those things, and that helps, you know, like up the Northeast or, you know, get it, bottom line it kind of people, you know, so relationally they're much quicker. I think it's because it's colder. They don't have a lot of time to talk because it wastes a lot of
into the heat
energy. Yeah, so they just are bottom line it kind of people. People in the Southwest, very different vibe. They're a little more casual, but leaders are leaders. They just, you know, they communicate a little differently. So I love talking leadership and helping leaders be better at what they do, not just at work, but at home. How are you leading your family? Mm-hmm. How are you leading your neighbors, your community around you? And of course, I don't lead my neighbors. Sure you do. You're an influencer. Leaders influence. How are you influencing your neighbors for the better? Do you talk to your neighbors? How can you influence your community around you? It'd be better if we didn't have divorce, right? It'd be better if marriages stayed together, people worked out their differences and related better. I mean, who goes into a marriage thinking, yeah, in 3.5 years, I'm going to get a divorce. That's why I'm getting married. You know, I like throwing away money. You know? I mean, it's crazy. We don't get into relationships so we can break them apart. Our dream is that we have a relationship for life. And so how that relates to leadership is how we lead at home and at work is developing people and pouring into them. Yes, bad things happen and horrible circumstances happen, and sometimes relationships break apart. I get that. I understand that. How then do we pick up the pieces and move on? But as leaders, how can we influence others to think better, to live better, to grow and make our communities better so that we are getting better ideas, we are excelling as a community? It's easy to complain about things. It's a wholly different thing to come up with solutions. I think of one leader. Oh man, she was awesome. Andrea, she was part of the TEDx at GCU. She gave us all gifts. They were bow ties and headbands. Her idea, she wanted to, let's see how much time I have. Okay, very, very quickly. Okay, so she wanted to make an impact, right? So she's thinking, oh, where can I go around the world to make this big impact? And decides, you know what? Maybe there's something here in America. She runs into I hope I get the story right, a Native American tribe in South Dakota, very, very poor. She goes up there, visits, and is like, okay, how can we really make an impact? But this is what she thought of. She thought, I don't want to give them a handout. Because she asked them, what do you need? And they said, we don't need more clothes and food. We need jobs. That's what will help. So she is thinking, okay, I don't want a hand out. I want a hand up. How can I help to change their economy? And, well, what skills do you have? Well, we do beads and textiles real well. So that's how she got this whole thing rolling. And they make these really cool-looking bow ties and headbands, and they sell them. And she's got her organization that does this. So she is helping to reshape and change this whole group of people, not by giving them something, but by helping them to grow out of that and do something that's impactful. And I love that thought process because that's the thought of a leader. Right?
Absolutely.
It's not just, you know, hey, I'll feel good. I'll just give something. No, I'm helping you become better. That's what I love about leadership. That's what leaders do, is we help people be better at what they do and grow and become, they lift them out of whatever situation they're out of, whether it's relational discord or financial discord or educational discord. We lift them out through leadership and help them be better. There's my soapbox. Okay.
Great soapbox. So we get to see you again on Friday.
Yes, very excited about that.
At Galvanize, the LinkedIn Local Phoenix event. And Chris, this is our second event.
This is the second one. The movement has pretty much hit the U.S. It's hit the world. I actually was even invited to a LinkedIn in Odessa, Texas. For those that know how many people live in Odessa, Texas, that should give you an idea of kind of where this meeting people in real life has kind of come into. Like we've become a social society in terms of liking, sharing, engaging with people through social media, but the physical interactions, the physical like meeting new people, connecting with people has kind of went down. And hopefully this is the way to reshape that going forward, where, like, now I know Jeff. Like, I love everything that Jeff will do anywhere, you know, social. Like, I want to know what he's doing on social media. The reason why, the reason why that is because I've met him in person. So, so as opposed to being one side or the other, I think that we're kind of in a time where meshing those together makes the relationships that you have with people. It means you can have more relationships, but you can have deeper relationships because you know more about what that person's going through daily or the kind of things that they're looking at. Or, you know, I can't tell you how many times I run into people and, you know, I reference something that they posted and I was like, dude, like...
I did that this morning with you.
Yeah, this actually happened earlier today when I walked in and Karen's like, I noticed that you were at work at 7 and you were the only one.
And but, it was a new thing for
you. Well, yeah, I've never been at work before 7, so...
Well, and we met on LinkedIn as well.
Exactly.
I had been curious about Galvanize. Rick Stoddard over at Coplex introduced me to Galvanize and he was the one who took me on my tour. And I'm not sure how we connected, but just was watching you do your thing and do it well on social media, particularly LinkedIn. And when we talked about you guys were promoting the first LinkedIn local event, I reached out to Chris, much like he did with you, to have the opportunity to come and speak to us at this event. I'm like, hey, is there any chance we can get you on Phoenix Business Radio with maybe a couple other people on the panel? And let's have a conversation. And it's been a fast conversation ever since.
And now me and Karen are best friends.
Besties.
Best friends.
My husband always wonders, who is this Chris? Yeah. When will I get to meet him? But that's the cool thing. To your point, social media is necessary in any generation, right? I have a lot of time people say, you know, I'm not interested in being on there. I'm like, look, if you're in business for yourself and you've got a brand that you represent, you better be on one of those platforms.
Yes.
Yeah. And once we establish those relationships all over the world, then there's an opportunity to feel like the world a little bit smaller and we can accelerate it like things through LinkedIn Local where we can get to know each other better and have an opportunity. But, man, if anybody says that they're struggling to get in front of the people that they want to do business with, then they're missing out on opportunities on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's my whole job is just telling people where to be so they can learn, connect with people, grow, even kind of what Karen said, specifically as it relates to LinkedIn Local, there's a lot of people that I see on LinkedIn or doing stuff, and I really just want to meet them because I'm like, that is rock star.
Yeah.
I would love to know more about you because I think we have the same mentality. I think you did this that's awesome, and I do this all the time with when I'm watching like Pluralsight or kind of these coding videos, and some of like my nerd heroes come out, and I'm like, oh my god,
fascinating.
One happened recently, and it's because he actually had his video bleeped out in the first 3 minutes. I was like, it was specifically what I learned in two years of computer science into 4 hours or something.
Oh my god.
But it was a truly bait clicky topic. But I was like, I just love the fact that you managed to go up there and, you know, just be you. And clearly you're a genius also. My kind of guy. Let's hang out, you know, grab coffee. I might even actually give him lunch. Jeff never made it to lunch.
No, we talked the whole time through.
The whole time. We never.
We kind of did the same with Diana. We ate, but barely.
Yeah.
So, listen, we're going to have to wrap it up, but I have already gave an open invitation for Jeff to come back to the studio and have another conversation with us.
We
hope you'll take us up on that. LinkedIn Local Phoenix at Galvanize this Friday.
This Friday.
The time frame again?
Six o'clock.
To 8 o'clock.
To 8 o'clock. Jeff, so how it's going to work, just a quick come. We're going to have some drinks, some food, mingle, intro yourself, openly connect. Hopefully I can kind of persuade more people in connecting with other people.
I
through
told
different
them put
things.
The drinks in the where we're speaking, so
exactly,
they'll come in.
Actually, exactly.
Smart. Oh, and we are going to be speaking in the amphitheater then.
And then Jeff is going to be in the amphitheater to present.
Come on in. You won't be disappointed. It'll be fun.
No, clearly,
and then we'll you know after that energize. You know, clearly you can see that Jeff will get you energized for a round two of
Thanks
talking
for
to
off
people.
The mic for that one.
I know, right? get you energized for another round of meeting cool and interesting people. So again, that's all it is meet people, connect with others that hopefully are in a different industry than you. And, you know, you can have these kind of weird relationships that I'm sharing right now, you know?
Like, we had, I think, over 200 people, the last one, and I know the number is at least close to that.
Yeah, so I haven't looked. We were at 200 a while ago, so hopefully we'll get about 300 plus signed up, and then, you know, whoever shows up. Hopefully it just keeps growing, and we keep, you know, just spreading, bringing more and more people into a community of meeting people.
How do we register? And can you give us the Galvanize website? And then I'll ask Jeff to tell us where we can find him, and we'll wrap up.
I think it's just LinkedIn Local Phoenix.
It'll come up in a Google.
Yeah,
it's an Eventbrite, I think.
It's an Eventbrite. If you just typed in LinkedIn Local Phoenix in Google, it absolutely is the first thing. It's also on the Galvanize website. If you just go to galvanize.com, if you go there for the first time, it kind of asks where you live because we have different campuses. But if you're on the Phoenix campus, essentially it's under our events tab, along with some of the other events we got going on.
And Jeff, how about for you? Where can we find you?
InDemandLeadership.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. You can just look up Jeff Orr. There's a few of us out there. But just find the one that says In Demand Leadership. Leadership Expert, I think, is the title. I change my title quite often depending on, you know, what I want to be that day. So.
Good. Well, yeah, well,
but I am
you
on
are
LinkedIn.
Easy to find. I found you.
Okay, there you go.
Good. And you will find all three of us and a whole lot more great people on Friday night for the LinkedIn Live Local Phoenix event at Galvanize. So, again, thank you, guys. It's been a blast. I think we
did okay
with all the commotion behind us.
Yeah, I think it gave us some energy, actually.
Oh, I think so.
It.
Yeah, go out and mingle. Have a great time. Hey, listen, you've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki. Thanks again for being here.